This is Scorebook Life Today, a podcast about high school sports in the state of Washington. I'm Andy Bueller, Scorebook Live reporter. Senior reporter Todd Millis is with me, as well as former NBA player, college basketball All-American, and Scorebook Life analyst Dan Dickow is as well. Gentlemen, hello. Thanks for joining me. How are you guys doing today?
Absolutely. We are completely in the swing of league play. You've got a lot of great topics we're going to cover today, so looking forward to it.
Yeah, Andy, I mean, a week ago at this time, you and I were over in Eastern Washington on our sort of mini tour of Yakima and Tri-Cities. It's we had a lot of fun, but I'm also glad to be back in Tacoma watching some really good hoops here on the west side.
Yeah, same here in Southwest Washington. And Todd, I'm really excited to share with readers some of the stories we were working on last week. A lot of that work is forthcoming, and we'll be sure to promote it here and on social media when it comes out. So a quick rundown of today's podcast. Kent Ridge standout Jordan Jenkins will miss her senior season with a torn ACL. We take a look at the McDonald's All-American Game nominations, what happened on the boys' side, and Union is 15-0, plays a blistering pace, and is scoring at a rate that is unmatched across the state. Can any team catch Union in 4A on the boys' side? After the break, then, Dan's going to catch up with Skyview boys coach Matt Grueler and Afredo boys coach Brandon Evanson, a good 2A CWAC team coming off a double OT loss to Toppenish. So without further ado, we're going to touch on a few topics. Kent Ridge standout Jordan Jenkins will miss her entire senior season with a torn ACL. Read Todd's story about Jenkins and comments from Kent Ridge coach Brad McDowell on the site scorebooklive.com/Washington. Jenkins is a USC signee and, according to ESPN, a five-star and the 40th ranked recruit in the class of 2020. Todd, how does the Jenkins injury impact the 4A landscape, which, as we discussed with Freddie Rico a couple weeks ago on this very podcast, coming into the year was already pretty wide open up top?
Yeah, in one word, significant. It changes the landscape significantly. I think if you asked most 4A contending coaches, the one team they feared the most, it would be Kent Ridge. They've won a state championship a few years ago, and they probably had the most fearsome player, most physical player in the state in Jordan Jenkins. Now, to kind of recap, Jenkins in the top of the peak tournament, holiday tournament, right after Christmas, they were playing Mount Spokane in the semifinals. Late in that game, she went crashing into the grandstands and tweaked her knee. She stayed down in the stands for a little bit. At the time, they thought, maybe she hyperextended it or it was sort of a deep bone bruise. I think, when I talked to Brad McDowell right after the first of the year, they were anticipating, maybe she'll miss a few weeks. They were optimistic in that belief. And then Tuesday, a week after or so, they had the MRI. It revealed the news that she had a torn ACL. This, not only changes the 4A NPSL, that makes Tahoma and Beamer much, much bigger players in improving their seeding position. But then you look at the 4A, and right now, it's kind of a crapshoot. There's not a lot going on consistently over in the GSL. Central Valley has kind of emerged as maybe the favorite, even though it seems like University, with their three Division I players, has more talent, but has not been able to get on any sort of run. You look at different parts of the state, the shakeup in the North Puget Sound League. I have no idea what's going on in the Greater St. Helens League. Right now, I think that you look at the three most consistent teams in 4A, you have to start in the Kinko with Woodinville and Mia Hughes and Veronica Sheffy. That duo has been consistent all year. They have a couple of young pieces in their front court, but they're not real deep. But it doesn't seem to really bother them. They've had some really impressive come from behind wins in the Kinko. They'll get to play Kent Ridge on Monday in the MLK tournament at the Showware. Right now, I would say that they're kind of the favorite, given that they're undefeated. They've been there before. They were in the championship game 2 years ago, losing to that really, really good Central Valley team coached by, Scorebook Live colleague Freddie Recco. But then you look at some of the other teams around the state I like. Glacier Peak and the Wesco. survived a couple early bumps, but I like the way they play. They have Aliyah Collins, who's, you know, more of a defensive minded point guard, who kind of really sets the tone for their pressure. You know, I from what they did in this summer, and now they're starting to hit their stride, I think they're a serious threat and it's starting to play their best ball right now. And then maybe a team that wasn't on a whole lot of radars in the preseason, but Rogers of Puyallup, undefeated, running through the 4A SBSL, a league that includes Bellarmine Prep, which was in the state semifinals last year. Right now they're playing like a team with swagger, with Reagan Barrett and Swilly and, or sorry, Lily. They have a really good guard in Pettit as their third guard, who's really emerged this year. Again, a lot like Glacier Peak, they like to apply full court pressure, not the biggest team. But right now, I think you look at those three teams and you say, you know, right now they're probably the three teams to beat. You know, it doesn't mean that Chiawana and Central Valley and some of these other teams can't get on a run here in the last 3 or 4 weeks heading into the postseason. But not having a physical Kent Ridge team to worry about in the postseason does change things dramatically. It'll be interesting to see what teams kind of emerge from that.
After the Seattle Times broke the news about Jenkins earlier this week, she tweeted out, "Y'all aren't ready for this comeback." So wishing Jenkins a speedy and full recovery as she looks to come back before she heads off to USC. The McDonald's All-American Game, the premier high school boys and girls national showcase, announced its senior nominees for the upcoming April games. We published a list of the nominees on the site, scorebooklive.com/Washington, on Tuesday. On the girls' side, 11 strong nominees headlined by Haley Van Lith at Cashmere, Dahlia Daniels at Garfield, and Jada Noble from Mount Spokane, among others. On the boys' side, though, 4 nominees total, all from Renton. That stood out to me. I wondered, out of all of the schools across the state, all the senior basketball players across the state, you look at some of the other states, California's got 50-plus nominees. Why just 4 nominees? Why just one school? So I reached out to the McDonald's All-American organizers about the process of nominating and why so few nominees from the state. Were there players on the boys' side nominated outside of the top 4 from Renton that for whatever reason didn't meet the eligibility requirement? What I found out was that all 15 players nominated, boys and girls, from Washington were accepted. Any players from any level can be nominated. Terry Lynn Wooten, who oversees the selection committee and nomination process for the McDonald's All-American Game, said, "It's very easy to nominate. It's just a matter of a coach, an athletic director, or a principal doing it between September 1st and December 1st each year." What do you guys make of this? And was there kind of an easy opportunity here missed for promoting and highlighting some of the state's top players? Like, what's the harm in nominating, say, a Liam Lloyd at Gonzaga Prep, or Garfield, who nominated Dahlia Daniels, but not Kendall Munson or Tari Eason on the boys' side? Was there an opportunity missed here?
Well, I think the McDonald's All-American Game has always been viewed as, you know, the pinnacle of individual accomplishments at the high school level. And kids want to make that game. It is unbelievably difficult to make that game. And from what I know of the voting process, they make it easy to be nominated. You just need a coach, a principal, or an athletic director, as you mentioned, to nominate the player. And there's thousands of players across the country that get nominated. But the evaluation and the voting process is very difficult to get through and be one of those final selections. You're going to have, you know, evaluators that have seen the top of the top throughout the season, but more importantly, the AAU and evaluation seasons making the final decisions, you know, to who is going to play in this game. Now, that being said, you know, it is a nice recognition for a senior, maybe by their coach or athletic director, to be nominated for the game. But I'll just be honest. I mean, the fact is, Renton's coach, I believe, has nominated each of their seniors the last however many years. So it's not that hard to nominate. I don't know why more coaches haven't done it. Maybe it's not a very clear process of how to nominate someone. But again, it's a very difficult process to be selected for the game. And nothing against any of the senior boys in the state this year. I just don't think any of them would have made the game this season. Because if you look at back at the history of the McDonald's All-American game and how many kids from the state of Washington have made it, it's a very select group.
Yeah, I mean, Dan hit it on the head there. Nail on the head. It's basically a PR stunt. And the McDonald's All-American people have really dialed it in. It's fantastic if you want to know the truth. I mean, they put out all the nominees. They send it out on a press release, you know, a week, 10 days before they actually announce the team. And you get all these people in their local papers and their local media going, oh my gosh, you know, look who's nominated from Renton, or look who's nominated from Wilson or Glacier Peak or whatever. And you're right. And then the one thing that, you know, I know in your research, Andy, is they have also a committee that if you weren't nominated, they have a committee in place, the McDonald's All-American people, to, you know, at their discretion, kind of, you know, invite or nominate their own people. And I think that's, you know, it's not difficult to find out who the 20 best seniors are around the country. They're everywhere. You got stories and you got rankings and whatnot. But again, what is the harm? I mean, what is the harm of taking 5 or 10 minutes and filling out a few names from your school, like kids, program kids who are maybe going to college, who deserve some recognition, who would get that recognition because the McDonald's All-American people release those names? Why not? I don't understand it. I mean, the chances of getting one of your kids, you know, into that game is less than 1%. I mean, you look at some of the players who haven't played the McDonald's All-American game and look at what they've gone on and done, you know, by Isaiah Thomas, Rodney Stuckey, I think even our own Dan Dickow. It's a tough nut to crack, but at the same time, why not try? I just don't get it.
A breakdown of nominees by state, which you can find in the story on scorebooklive.com/Washington. Like I said, states like California, 50-plus kids nominated, probably a lot more than that. I didn't exactly count, but the list was long. Every nomination coming from the same school in Washington, it seems like a missed opportunity. I'd be interested to hear from coaches who either decided not to or maybe didn't know about the deadline for nominating players. Why didn't they? Did they not know about it? I'm genuinely curious. So if you're a coach or an athletic director listening, please reach out by all means. On the girls' side, at least one player could legitimately make the game. It's televised on national TV every year, and selections for the teams will be made public on January 23rd. Moving on, Union is 15-0. They've scored 90-plus 8 times this season, and with a good strength of schedule, most games the Titans have played have not been close. Dan, is there a team across the state of Washington that you believe can compete, slow down, and or trip up this Union team? Because as of now, it doesn't look like anyone can do it.
I think the interesting thing with Union and what they're doing and scoring all the points is they're really good offensively. I mean, you cannot take away Tanner Toulson's versatility, his ability to shoot it, finish at the rim, get other guys involved. Brad Lackey, I believe, had a game earlier this year where, correct me if I'm wrong, I think he may have had 10 made threes. And so they've got weapons on the offensive end. But I think defensively is where coaches tell me that's what separates them. Yeah, they're very good offensively. But defensively, Coach Conley gets guys to buy in, and he gets them to play in a pace and with an energy level that is really hard to do. You're going to see lots of different kinds of presses. You're going to see lots of pressure, whether it's man, whether it's zone. And they're not going to be a team that lets up. They're relentless in their pressure. And when you have, you know, that mindset and you get a turnover – and then you have the freedom to just push it down the floor and make plays, which they do. And then they've got the weapons to be able to finish those plays. You're talking about a difficult kind of team to deal with. If you are an opposing team that wants to beat Union, the first thing you have to do is you have to handle their pressure. And so in looking at that, you're going to have to say, man, we can't turn the ball over. So you need great guard play. And so that leads me to thinking, you know, Mount Si might have, you know, the best shot to knock them off right now. And I know Union beat them earlier this year at Mount Si, and Mount Si would love to get another crack at them. But I think if you look at that matchup, they do have the backcourt and the ball handlers and the playmakers to be able to take care of the ball against Union's pressure with Jade Mullins, with the Bennett O'Connor and Tyler Patterson. So that would be a very interesting matchup to me. Now, I don't want to go ahead and move too far in the season and crown Union state champs yet, because again, last year I think they ran off 21-22 in a row, and unfortunately they lost at the wrong time of the season. And Coach Conley is going to have those guys very mindful of that and continuing to prepare and improve as the season goes on so that they're peaking at the state tournament.
Yeah, you know, I had a chance to see these guys play at the Highline tournament against a really good 2A team in North Kitsap, and I think, you know, the headline I sort of wrote coming from that game was, is Union the fastest team in 4A? I'll tell you, it's really, really impressive to watch when they have a sliver to run, you know, and the way Brad Lackey, he seems to make all the right decisions on the break. It helps when you've got two really good people on the wing and Caden Horn and Tanner Toulison to dish to, but this guy makes it all go. He makes all the right decisions. And he can do it traveling and running and cutting and breaking that fast. I had a coach tell me today, he goes, you know, I think they just came off a game where they scored 100 points. He goes, you'd have to go back to some of those Rainier Beach teams in the late 90s, early 2000s, maybe Jamal's teams, not only scoring output, but the way, how fast they could get up and down the court. You know, obviously Jamal Crawford might be the fastest, you know, basketball, high school basketball player I've ever seen in terms of his ability to get up and down the court. That's the kind of pace in which they play with. I don't think teams that have seen them, and I don't think they know until they get on the court with them about how quickly they can get up and down the court. That's the first realization you have when you face them. Now, how do you beat them? Dan touched on them. You need a really good point guard to handle their pressure. I also think you need a really good big guy that can rebound and keep them off the boards and kind of slow them down that way. They're not big. I know Tanner's probably their best rebounder, but he's playing more on the wing this year. But I think you need a big guy that you can not only feed it to down on the post, but a guy that can clean up the glass and not let them get rebounds and opportunities to get out and run. So, man, I'll tell you, I agree with you. I think Mount Si would welcome a chance in a rematch and a revenge game. You know, they're a proud team. They were in the state finals last year, but the team that I saw at Highline, it's hard to imagine a team, another 4A team with the pieces to do all of that, to slow them down, to make them play more of a controlled tempo game. I know, by the way, you mentioned their coach, you know, Conley. Is there a guy that is, you know, in terms of scouting an opponent, is there anybody better in 4A than him? I mean, he, in terms of game planning to a specific opponent, his teams are so prepared. It's going to be a really, really, it's going to be a really, really tough thing to do for somebody in 4A to, in my opinion, to knock them off. But maybe there's a team out there we've forgotten. I just haven't seen him yet.
If you'd like to see Union take on a good league opponent, there's a boys and girls doubleheader against Skyview on Tuesday, 5:30 and 7, I believe. Both games should tell us a lot. Can Skyview on the boys' side, led by Squeaky Johnson, Kyle Grueler, and Jace Chapman, slow down or keep up with the Titans? This is the first of two matchups here in league play, so we shall see. We'll hear from Skyview coach Matt Grueler, of course, after the break, his conversation with Dan. But before that, we bring you a segment. It's called Bring the Links. We talk about a story we read, watched, or something we saw that either directly or loosely relates back to high school sports. It can really be anything. Dan, do you want to go first?
Absolutely. So I've got a story here on ESPN.com. It was on the front page earlier today. It might be on the NBA's head page for the ESPN.com. It is about Zion Williamson making his return to actually being able to play. Number one pick in the NBA draft last year out of Duke, had knee surgery. It's taken him a little bit of time to get back, and it's really interesting article in talking about how he's recovered from his knee surgery, how he's rehabbed it, and how they are trying to make sure that something like this doesn't happen again, and they're fully focused on how he moves, how he runs, how he lands, how he takes off, his physiology of how he essentially moves as an athlete. And I thought some of the most interesting points in this article and how it comes back and ties into to high school athletics is there was a quote by one of the front office player front office executives in the NBA talking about how the difference of physical breakdowns in these players are happening at a much younger age because of all the workouts they've done at a younger age, typically at your youth level and your high school level. But also, when many of these workouts are happening, their body isn't physically ready for them. These trainers don't know what to look for, and so they're putting them through workouts maybe that they've seen a 35-year-old do that their body and their bones and their structure can physically handle. But the youth, you know, your 12, 15, 16-year-olds, their bodies aren't ready to handle it. So you're beginning to break these athletes' bodies down way too early. And so now when these guys, if they're good enough, they're getting to the NBA, and they physically already have the body structure of a 30, 32-year-old. And so the NBA trainers are trying to figure out how to manage these players' bodies and fix them and repair them, as opposed to just focusing on skill work and getting them acclimated to the pro game.
I'll have to check that out, and you can too. We're going to link all these in the show notes. So, Todd, what's your story?
Yeah, I'm going to stick with the NBA theme, but I'm going to stick with something that I don't think anybody expected to happen anytime soon. But Kobe Bryant deciding that he and his daughter, Natalia, are going to fly to East Wenatchee on Saturday and watch Louisville commit Haley Van Lith play in her home gym against Medical Lake. It's a fascinating story. Obviously, it shook up the town of Kashmir, which is, you know, on the North Central Highway. It's not the easiest place in the world to get to. But, you know, there's some history with these two. You know, Van Lith had attended Kobe Bryant's academy. But it's, I think the motivating factor was his daughter, because his daughter had seen Van Lith play this summer on the U18 team, Team USA team, and was became a big fan of Van Lith. And so, you know, on a whim, you know, the two of them fly to East Wenatchee and drive up to Kashmir and watch him play, and obviously created a huge buzz in the gymnasium. Credit to Kobe Bryant for sticking around and doing a lot of autographs and photos and going in the locker room and talking to the team. And, you know, what a great story for that town. You know, having an NBA star of that magnitude come and watch a game in that home gymnasium. This is a story that I think we'll be talking about for years. And I think people up there will never forget. They'll tell their grandkids about it. So it's a great story coming out of a pretty cool basketball town with arguably the best player in the state, you know, where she's finishing her career this year.
Yeah, I love that story. I thought that was phenomenal to see. And I think what it shows you is just how much Kobe Bryant loves basketball. Obviously, you love your kids. You're going to love your kids. You're going to try to, you know, find ways for them to be around and be motivated and inspired by something that they love. But the fact is Kobe probably could have gone and taken his daughter to a good high school basketball game in Southern California. But he obviously saw something in Haley Van Lith when he saw her down in L.A. in the summertime. And he was willing to go up to Wenatchee and then up to Kashmir. That's phenomenal. I agree.
Certainly something the Kashmir community and those present will not soon forget. The story I chose came out this morning, Thursday, as we're recording this, on The Athletic. It requires a subscription to read, but honestly, I think it's worth it just for this story alone. It's about Brandon Roy, who's now Garfield's head boys basketball coach. He's a two-time state champion as a coach at Nathan Hale and Garfield, and a Seattle basketball legend whose NBA career with the Portland Trailblazers was cut short by degenerative knees and 7 total knee surgeries. Roy's a multi-time All-Star who does not really do much press, but he sat down with Jason Quick of The Athletic. Recently, the headline is, "Being honest is how you change. Brandon Roy is trying to find his peace." And as somebody who grew up in Portland as Roy led a playoff basketball revival in the city, he really had a huge impact on Portland, on Oregon. And that extends across the Northwest, obviously. Now he's doing it as a coach at Garfield, where he's been really successful. He took coaching off of last year for reasons that Roy never has talked about publicly until now. He does in this piece, just about some personal struggles and needing to get himself right. The chunk of this story, though, that I really love most was talking about how he needed to prioritize the things that he cared about most in his life. Chief among them were his children. He shared a story about how his young daughter, Mariah, was playing a basketball game in Kirkland. She was on this dominant team that lost their first game. And so she was silent on the ride home. She was upset. So he thought about something his parents used to do for him when he was growing up. He took him and his son, Brandon Jr., to Garfield's gym. They did some shooting drills, and they basically played until both kids were laughing and having a good time. So, enjoyable read. Again, you can find that on The Athletic. We'll link it in the show notes. Thank you guys for sharing your stories. We're going to take a quick break. When we're back, Dan Dickow is joined by Matt Grueler, Skyview Boys head basketball coach. After that, Ephrata Boys coach Brandon Evenson.
Washington Federal is a bank based in Seattle that operates 235 branches, and it cares deeply about high school sports not only in the Seattle metro area, but across the entire state of Washington. Head to WashingtonFederal.com to learn more or visit your closest branch.
Dan Dickow, Scorebook Live, Washington, on the phone with Skyview head coach Matt Grueler out of the GSHL in Vancouver. Sitting at 10-2 on the season, just now getting started with league play. Matt, appreciate you joining us. Tell us about the early season for you guys. You started with a tough loss, but then you've really started playing good basketball as of late.
Yeah, you know, it's always, you never quite know what you're going to get when you have a team. We have a decent amount of new players, or players in new positions for sure. And so first game out of the gate, we, you know, hit a buzzsaw in Evergreen that's played really, really well. And then we kind of figure out, slowly but surely, kind of who we are, what our roles are on the team. And our kids have been really buying into their spots and buying into playing how we want to play. And so it's been a really good, it's been a really fun start to the season. I told our coaches a couple days ago, if you would have told us in the non-league in those 12 games that we would have gone 10-2, I'd have taken that right from the beginning. I mean, that's we had a really challenging non-league, so we're pretty happy about where we've been at.
Yeah, Evergreen, you mentioned the loss. I mean, they've surprised a ton of people at the 3A level. You know, they're creeping up their Scorebook Live power rankings as well as the 3A coaches poll. But the other loss that you guys had was down over the Christmas break. You guys went out on the road, as many teams did across the state, to go play against outside competition. You guys lost to South Anchorage. What did you learn about your team by getting out of state for a couple days? Was it a learning experience? Was it a kind of chemistry boost? Was it more of a basketball kind of what you learned on the basketball court? Or was it a combination of everything?
Yeah, I think, you know, probably a combination of all of that. You know, it was the first time that we in our program have gone kind of out of state, well, I guess out of state, but like traveling far away. We obviously can play in Oregon, but, you know, for us to go fly in a plane and go do that. So the Cactus Jam, I thought, was really good for us just to kind of go see some different teams. You know, no shot clock, which is different for You know, a lot of teams when they travel out of state. So, you know, some of that stuff was fun, you know, really good for us. I thought the best part about traveling out of state was just the amount of time the kids got to spend together. We've got a senior class that's been together for a good amount of time, and I've watched them grow up since they were in, you know, third, fourth grade, because my son's been part of that class. And so it was really kind of a special time to get away with some of those guys. I've got a couple other players we've coached for a few years. Again, they come to camp and all that stuff. So it was really kind of a great bonding experience. You know, I think on the basketball floor we learned, you know, how much you have to bring it every night to compete. And I think, especially in our league, you've got to really bring it every night. So, you know, one of those nights we didn't bring it quite as bad, you know, as well as we probably should have, and ended up taking a loss and taking second place in the tournament. So, I thought that was all good for our kids. I think they've learned those lessons, and you know, again, hopefully they apply that to what we've got going on here in the next 7 games.
We spotlighted one of your seniors, Kyle Grueler, your son, at our Southwest Washington Media Day. He's made a couple of our preseason players to watch list, but you had told me in the summer and in the fall when I started building out a lot of my lists and talking to coaches about a couple of your other players, Squeaky Johnson and Jace Chapman. Tell us about their kind of growth as players and what they've provided for you guys this year.
Well, yeah, I think the best part of all those guys are that they're basketball aholics. I mean, they're gym rats. You know, all of their families, you know, Kyle being my son, Squeaky Johnson's dad, Brett is our girls varsity coach at Skyview. Then Jace Chapman has a long history. His dad coaches him in AAU, and his brother just got finished playing at Boston College, and his sister plays Division I basketball as well. You know, those guys, they love being in the gym, and they love, you know, getting better. And so, you know, it's interesting to see, you know, especially both Squeaky and Kyle missed a big chunk of the summer because of injury. So it was interesting to see going into the season what our team was going to look like. Guys with new roles, Kyle kind of going from, you know, a guy that was a secondary role on the team to, you know, maybe somebody who had to be more of the focal point. Same with all those guys who kind of stepped up a rung in the ladder. You know, Squeaky has really done a really good job leading. He's a great point guard. Great with assist turnover ratio. He really takes care of the ball, and has really been shooting the ball better than he has in the past couple seasons. So, and that's really kind of opened up our offense. And when we've played our best, it's usually when Squeaky's been making shots from the perimeter. Jace has just been really solid all around. He's a great shooter as well, shooting over 45% from three, and does a lot for our team. And so those two guys have really brought a lot to what's going on. And then Kyle's consistency has been really positive for us as well. He's averaging over 20 points a game, and doing it inside and outside. And I think he's kind of learned how to be the focal point, when to pass, when to kind of call his own number. And so it's been fun to watch them grow into those positions and hopefully continue to grow. As you know, we still got a long way to go to be as good as we want to be, but it's been fun to see those guys progress.
There's been a lot of really good leagues over the course of the state of Washington at the 4A level over the last few years, and I think the GSHL has to be considered one of those. You look around the league, Camas is a little down this year, but they've been really good in the past. Battleground is absolutely back, although they've lost a few games that I'm sure Manny Mello would like to have another crack at. But then you look at Union, the juggernaut. Last year they were undefeated heading into the state tournament. This year they're playing as well as anybody, undefeated on the season. You got to love having them in your backyard to kind of continue to motivate you guys, but you also want to beat them. What is so special about Union, what they're doing, and what do you guys need to improve upon in the next couple weeks before you that big matchup against them on January 21st?
Yeah, you got to love and hate them all at the same time. You know, Union's what I think they're have been the best at around here, and maybe around the whole entire state. And I think if you look at our state, I'd make the argument they're the best team in the state, no matter what the classification, the way that they're playing, and who they have on their team. What they've done a really good job of is that their culture and their development. It seems like every year they lose a guy that you're like, okay, well, they lost him, thank goodness. Like, they've got to take a step back, and then those kids, the next group of guys develop, they get in the weight room, they shoot, and the next guy's ready to take the next step up. So, you know, it seems like it's happened, like, year after year between back from Riley Hawken to Tyler Combs, Ethan Smith, and those guys, they just continue. Cameron Cranston, I mean, it's just guy after guy after guy. It starts as a guy that's, oh, he's a good player, to, like, wow, he's a great player. And so, you know, I give a lot of credit to them. And so, yeah, it pushes every program in our area, you know, any classification, but especially at the 4A level, you know, you've got to really be a good team to be able to compete with them. For us, you know, they're really pressuring the basketball. And so we spend a lot of time just kind of talking around how to value possessions, how to value the basketball, and take care of the ball with pressure, knowing that that's what they're going to be, you know, doing to us, as well as, you know, how to play with the pace that they're playing at, and sometimes change that pace. So I think that's what we're working on kind of going forward. You know, it's easy to say all those things, and then I watch them take teams that are trying to do the exact same thing and still get them to play at the pace that they want to. I think they've done a really good job of playing it how they want to play. So our goal is to try to get them to play a little bit differently. And, you know, easier said than done. Sounds really good on paper, but until we get it going, that's what's going to be doing, but we'll be focusing on that. But, you know, at the end of the day, like, we're – you know, that's 2 weeks from now. We've got big games, like you said, against Battleground, who's very talented, and Camus, who's, you know, really plays well, plays the game the right way. So just got done playing against Arizona. So our league is a tough one, and again, I think a lot of that comes from Union having to push the bar, and then everybody's got to catch up to that bar.
Well, Coach, we appreciate you joining us on the Scorebook Live podcast. We wish you guys continued success. We'll be watching out for that game on January 21st, as well as the rest of the race to the end of the year in the GSHL. So thanks a lot, Coach. Appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate you. Thank you very much.
Dan Dickow, Scorebook Live, Washington, here with Brandon Evenson, head coach of 2A in the CWAC, Ephrata. Looking to continue to surprise a number of people throughout this early part of the season. They're sitting at 8-2 overall, 6-2 in league. Brandon, thanks for joining us. How have you felt the first part of the season's gone for you and your ball club?
Really well. You know, I think this group has gelled really well and playing the best defense that I've had. Teams playing, you know, probably 16 years that I've been coach here. And so, we played well on the road, lost a couple close ones at home to some good teams, and so I don't think we played our best basketball, but we're playing pretty good basketball right now.
We touched on, you know, the scheduling for a team in your league, the CWAC, which when I've talked to a number of coaches at the 1A and 2A level, thinks it's maybe the most balanced league across the state in those two classifications. I guess two-pronged question, how do you feel the balance in the league is this year? And then the scheduling, the fact that you guys have 18 league games, how important are those two non-leagues, whether to challenge yourselves or whether to make sure you're getting the right kind of confidence for your ball club?
Oh, man. For the first part, the CWAC is really balanced. I mean, we have 8 or 9 teams that could beat anybody on any given night. You know, so it really depends on where you're at and how hard you play that night. If you don't show up, the team can beat you. So I think that statement is very true in that it's very balanced this year. You know, Topner's kind of top dog right now. But you know, we still have 9-10 more league games to do. And so lots of shake up. Like, you could drop from 2nd to 7th really fast. So that part is absolutely true. And then the second part of that question about scheduling our non-leagues, you do have to be kind of picky with the RPI. You want to make sure that you're playing people that are decent teams, and but try to get yourself confidence. You know, this year we had Cashmere on our schedule, who last year did really well, and this year they're doing really well, and it was a great game for us. And then we played Connell, who, you know, has a very young team this year, but in their right mind has a great program going. And so that's kind of what we look at. Hopefully next year when our league shakes up a little bit with the new classifications that we can find some great programs that we can play.
You talk about the kind of the balance in the CWAC at the 2A level and a couple of the teams at the top, Toppenish undefeated on the season. You guys lost to them by 5, and your other loss on the year was to Sela by 4. Both of those teams are in our Scorebook Live coaches poll top 10, as are you guys. What was the difference maker in both of those losses for you guys, and what are you looking to improve upon after those two losses?
Well, the Toppenish game was in overtime, and they had a couple of threes in overtime, and we had a couple rim out. And so that was the difference. Toppenish is really, really quick, and they're a young, seasoned group, if that makes sense. They have some kids that have been on varsity a long time. And so to improve, we just need to handle, I guess, the spotlight of the big game, I thought. And I thought we did that fine. You lose in overtime, that's a pretty good game. And then Sela's just... Noah Pepper is amazing, and that group of kids, it was a tie game with 14 seconds left, and they hit a couple free throws at the end and kind of sealed the deal. So, you know, I think it's just getting my guys, even though we have quite a few seniors, you know, we just got to be used to being in those games, and I think we've showed that as of late, you know, that the Grandview win was big down there at Grandview, and... so I think that's what we're going to improve on and just keep grinding on what we're doing well.
You mentioned to me the experience and the balance of your roster is a pleasure to coach, not to mention the fact that your team is very unselfish. You guys do have a player that won one of our Player of the Week awards earlier this year in Bo Hesse. Describe his game and how he is a leader for you guys.
Well, Bo's super quiet. You'll never know if he's having a bad game or a good game. You know, he just gentle. I call him the gentle giant. He never says a word boo. So he's kind of an inside-out guy, but, you know, like against Grandview, he had three threes. He had a dunk. He's just a kind of quiet assassin, really long inside. You know, anchors our defense in the middle. Just a super kid, you know, high GPA, going to have his AA done here soon. He's just a really neat kid to have around.
Well, you guys have about 8 games left in league play before playoffs start. I know the goal is to get to the Yakima Sun Dome. What are the key things that you guys need to improve upon to finish your season in the Sun Dome and finish it on a positive note?
Yeah, I think in our league, limiting turnovers is huge. And we've done a pretty good job with that, and I think that's why we've been successful. And so we just want to continue to do that. Obviously, rebounding is big. So that also is one we're going to keep focusing on. And we actually have 10 more league games because we finished with Othello on the first half, and then we have another 9 to play again. So, you know, it's going to be a grind. Some on the road, some on the way, and you never know what's going to happen in the CWAC.
Well, Coach, we're looking forward to following not only the action across the state, but the CWAC, which is looking to be one of the really exciting kind of leagues to follow throughout this year because of the balance. And we're looking forward to it, as I mentioned. So, Coach, thanks for joining. We appreciate it, and good luck the rest of the way.
Thank you.
Thank you.